Hey, queer fam, an announcement here. If you're in NYC or anywhere close by, mark your calendars. On Friday, June 28th at 12 p.m., that's 2025, that's this year, the Queer Family Podcast is teaming up with Sugar Mouse NYC and our friends over at Gays with Kids and GWK Academy to throw our very first Pride Family Meetup. And y'all are all invited. Let's go. This is a family-friendly Pride party made just for us. There's a full bar for the grown-ups. There are arcade games and activities for the kiddos. And wait for it, a drag story hour with the fabulous Ms. Jade. It's all going down at Sugar Mouse on the Lower East Side. You can RSVP using the link in the show notes. And of course, the link is all over my socials too. So come, connect, celebrate, and let's build our queer parenting village and celebrate this super resilient and fabulous community. I will see you there. Let's go. Let's party. It's time. This episode and the entire year of episodes is proudly brought to you by California Cryobank. Use code QueerFam25 for a free level 2 subscription to their donor catalog. You're going to go make the babies and then come talk to me about them.
The Queer Family Podcast. Love is love is love on the Queer Family Podcast. Love is love is love on the Queer Family Podcast. Love is love is love on the Queer Family Podcast. Love is love.
I just feel like it's my mission to make sure everybody knows that lactation is for anyone, right? Like, people talk about, oh, can I induce lactation if I'm trans? Yes, absolutely, yes. You can. Can mm-hmm. I induce lactation if I had a hysterectomy when I was younger? Yes, absolutely, mm-hmm. you can. Having a uterus is irrelevant to lactation. People don't know this, and oftentimes until that information is no longer relevant to them. So I need to make sure everybody knows this ahead of time.
Welcome, y'all, to the Queer Family Podcast, the show all about family, but with gay. Woo! My wife actually got the tagline for the first time.
Yeah.
And my wife
been practicing.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure you have. My wife is here with us for another intro. What a treat.
That's what happens when you're on medical leave and are so bored and just can't lay on the couch.
That you finally agree to sit with your wife and do things. So sad.
Well, I'll go out to lunch with you anytime. Record is a different.
And she's actually on camera this time. This is the show that highlights, celebrates, uplifts, and normalizes LGBTQIA families and all of our beautifully fabulous identities. And we're coming at you in this month's Pride Extravaganza. Mm. And do you know that this is our third annual Pride Extravaganza?
I do. I know. June is always fun.
It means you get double the episodes. You get an episode not just only on Mondays, but you get one every Monday and every Thursday for the entire month of June, which makes home life so fun.
Right, because people don't realize that means that Jamie just has to do double the work.
But it's worth it.
Oh, yeah.
It's worth it for the representation and the normalization that these stories provide, mm-hmm. Ann Woods. And today's episode is really fantastic. I sat down with Jacob, who is a licensed... What is it?
Lactation.
Thank you. God, I can't. My brain isn't thinking of things. I had to ask Anne 3 times before we started recording. What is it called? What is it called? A licensed lactation consultant, which I know what that is because I actually had to use one at one point. But Jacob is a licensed lactation consultant. And Jacob also is a cisgendered male who is married to his trans husband. So
beautiful.
Yes. Really interesting, beautiful story. So I'm excited. And Jacob also wrote a book about this as well. So y'all are going to have a really great time hearing Jacob's story. Before we roll that tape, we have to talk about some stuff that's happening in our lives right now. What's happening in our lives, Anne?
Didn't we talk about that already? Or we're talking about it again? Or because it's a different episode? Or is it, I'm confused.
We talked about it like a while ago and now.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So, well, we could talk about what happened this morning because I'm still on a high from it.
Oh, Jamie's now a new member of the PS340 6th Avenue Middle Elementary School SLT team, which is the
what is it?
Senior leadership team.
Oh,
at the school.
It's a part of the piece. You know, y'all know me and Ann have been doing our upstanding.
Congratulations, Jamin.
Thanks, Ann. Thanks. But we've been really frustrated with the way these New York City schools, especially our children's school, which is in Chelsea, has been going about things in the lack of names of equity, diversity, inclusion, and all the things that go with that. And we've been really fighting a lot and like raising awareness as much as we can. And I finally decided, all right, these PTA elections are coming up. I know I don't have the bandwidth to be like a full-on PTA member, but they have this team, the SLT team, that basically meets with the principal once a month and raises concerns of the community and talks about policy and all
and kinds curriculum of and academics.
Yes. And I'm looking at this as like me being a little birdie in our principal's ear. In the names of all the things that we hold dear and care about. Yeah. And I think that our community needs to realize that we need to do a lot more work in that aspect. So I had to say a speech. I was so nervous. Listen, I know I talk to y'all a lot, like in this little bubble here. And I seem like I have no problem talking about things, but standing in front of people and saying my own words is actually extremely nerve-wracking. Like really scary. And everybody was just standing up in the room to say their speeches because everybody was kind of dispersed all over the place because it's a school library. And I was like, in my head, I was like, you know what I'm going to do? First of all, because I'm short, but also because it's a power move. I'm going to walk to the front and be like.
Oh, she did.
And I did. And I made a joke out of it. And then I got everybody laughing and it started the speech off to a lovely start. And there was laughter throughout it all.
There was, yeah. She added a great amount of levity. It was good.
It was good. It was. I feel like it was the entertainment of the morning.
It was. You did. It was almost like I was up there. No, I'm just kidding.
It's true. I look to you for the speeches, but I think it was a good speech, and I knew it was going to go well when I started out by telling the story about how my daughter Rose, when she was in second grade, looked to me one day on our way to school in June while we were looking at all the pride decorations. And she turned to me and she said, Mom, how come my school doesn't decorate for pride? And she was like, so sad. And I didn't have an answer for her. And I didn't even realize that her school didn't decorate for pride because I was not involved at any point in any way at that point. But me and Rose wrote a letter to our principal right then and there and sent it. And then shortly thereafter, pride decorations were put up and they've been put up ever since. And it was because of that letter. And I got snaps from people and a whoop, which was kind of, I don't know a lot of these people. I don't know them. And a lot of people actually hate me because they hear that I say bad things about a PTA member. No comment. but anyway, it went well. And I talked about Stacey Anchin's quote about how I'm raising my kids to be upstanders, not bystanders. And I feel like that, the upstanders in us all, won out today. And it makes me really happy. And I'm kind of on a high from it.
Yeah. And you should be. Congratulations.
Good. Thanks.
There were six people running and only two got elected. So it wasn't a shoo-in.
It sure wasn't, Ann. Sure wasn't. And there was someone running against me, I think just for the purpose of running against me, honestly. And she's not nice to me. So...
And she lost.
She lost. So I tried to give her a sticker one day. She wouldn't take a sticker. She was so salty with me. I was like, it's a sticker. Just take the sticker. Like, what? I don't understand. Anyway, we digress. All right. We got to get to the episode, but I just wanted to take a moment and revel in that with my beautiful wife here.
You had a good day.
So far. And now I only have two more things that I have to be like nervous about for June. It's been a very busy month. Don't forget to come to my panel that I'm speaking on. Oh my God, this week. Oh my God. If you're in DC, and also our big Pride family get together, which is happening in New York City on June 28th, which you've already heard about because it's already been in the episode. Anyway. All right. Let's roll the tape. Love y'all. I'm so glad you're here. Still continuing to tune in. I hope everyone is still enjoying your Pride month. Celebrate Beshaz because we deserve it. And Helen and Beulah, please.
Roll the tape.
There you go, Ann.
Peace out.
Oh, my God. You could be like a regular co-host the way you're doing this, Ann. Good work. All right. Let's roll this tape.
Queer Family Podcast. Love is love.
Hi, Jacob.
Hi.
So lovely having you here. We've already been chatting, and I can tell we're going to have a really great conversation.
Great. Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
I'm excited to hear all about your stuff. And before we get into like the meat of it, you know, I just warned you, you're going to give me your 30-second elevator pitch of who you are and why you're here chatting with the Queer Fam Squad. Okay, on your mark, get set, go. It's very official.
My name is Jacob Engelsman. I am an international board certified lactation consultant. I primarily work with queer and trans families, and I just wrote a book, which I'm going to hold up, called Lactation for the Rest of Us, a guide for queer and trans parents and helpers. It was just released by Jessica Kingsley Publishers.
Boom. Look at you. Oh, there's more. There's more. Keep going. I'm going to put the timer down. Keep going, Jacob.
Yeah, I've been speaking on this subject, writing and speaking on this subject for the last couple of years, ever since I got my certification. And it's just one of those things that, you know, people don't know what they don't know, right?
Yeah.
So when I start talking about inducing lactation, often people start to talk about how they wish they knew about this when it was relevant to them, when their wife gave birth or when they had adopted their child. They wish they knew that that was a thing. And now I just feel like it's my mission to make sure everybody knows that lactation is for anyone, right? Like people talk about, oh, can I induce lactation if I'm trans? Yes, absolutely you can. Can I induce lactation if I had a hysterectomy when I was younger? Yes, absolutely you can. Having a uterus is irrelevant to lactation. People don't know this, and oftentimes until that information is no longer relevant to them. So I need to make sure everybody knows this ahead of time.
I've spoken to many people throughout the years who do talk about induced lactation and who have actually induced lactation. Although I have to say, I didn't know about induced lactation till the second season of this show. I had no idea before I started speaking with all the people in the community. And so I've also spoken with kind of experts on it and midwives who have books, who have put a portion about it in their books. But this is the first time I'm talking to somebody who wrote a whole book just on that. I can't believe there's enough to put into a whole book. And it's amazing because it is something that needs to be out there. I full-heartedly agree. And I don't know if it's for everyone. I don't know if my wife and I would have done it, but it would have been nice to know it was an option.
Exactly. Right. There's no harm in knowing about it.
Yeah, exactly. So before we get into what all's in the book, I love your mission and I wholeheartedly agree with your mission. And I love mission-driven work because I do it myself. I want to learn about you, Jacob. I want to know your personal story, if I can get nosy for a second. Do you mind?
Yeah, absolutely. Because I because I am not who people think of when they think of a lactation consultant.
Well, oh, that, yes. I will say you are the first cisgendered male I've spoken to who is an expert on this.
I'm in an interesting position because a lot of people just assume I'm a doctor. And because like, why would a guy like be a lactation consultant? Right. Like,
yeah.
And yeah, like most guys who do have their IBCLC certification are like pediatricians or something like that. So how did I end up being?
How did you get up here? Tell us.
This is very much a second career for me. I worked in food service for a long time, just like from high school, you know, but it was never really like what I wanted to do with the rest of my life, you know? So after my husband got his master's degree and after like he really started his career, we moved to Atlanta, which is where we live now, and kind of decided like, okay, it's now Jacob's turn to figure out what he really wants to do. And I knew two things was that I wanted to take care of babies and I did not want to go to med school, right? I have no business trying to do that much academia. I did some doula trainings. I did a postpartum doula training, a birth doula training. Just started like talking to the people in the Atlanta birth community, the Atlanta lactation community. Eventually ended up with a position at a lactation clinic called Breastfeed Atlanta, where I was just hired on as the secretary, right? I was scheduling consultations. I was cleaning pump parts and I was filing insurance claims. And that served really well to like keep my foot in the door of the community while I figured out what I specifically wanted to do. Because by that time, I had done the doula trainings, but I realized I didn't really want to be a doula, right? Mm-hmm. That's more like, I always tell people that's more like parent care than child care. Mm-hmm. I was working there part-time and I was nannying for just for various families because, you know, working at a lactation clinic, you meet a lot of new parents who, you know, might need some help at home. After about 6 months, the owner of the clinic was just like, Jacob, you should just be like, get certified as an IBCLC. Even if it ends up not being what you want to do, like, there's no downside to it. You've already learned so much. You can get your clinical hours here. You should just get the certification because there's, you know, there is a bit of a financial investment in the education and that sort of thing. So I got my certification. And while I was doing all this education, I was reading these books. I was reading like the Journal of Human Lactation and like, you know, all the medical journals about it, Academy of Breastfeeding Medicine, all that stuff. I was realizing that there's all of this information that would be super relevant to the queer community for all sorts of people, right? For trans guys, for non-binary people, for trans women. There's all of this information that's super relevant to this community that is A, not readily available, right? Because most parents aren't reading the Journal of Human Lactation. And B, like in the books where it is, you know, written for parents or written at least in a way that's more accessible, it's written assuming that the parents are a cis hetero couple who, mm-hmm. you know, have adopted a baby or have a surrogate or something like that. And again, at this time I was in training. So I says to myself, this is a book that needs to exist. I have no business writing this book, right? I'm in training. I'm not qualified yet. If this book still doesn't exist by the time I am qualified to write it, I'm going to write it.
So that's your path to writing the book, and mm-hmm. I full-heartedly support that. And yes, mission-driven work. What about your personal story with your husband and how you two came to be and your journey towards being a member of this beautiful LGBTQIA community, as I like to call us? Can we dig into that?
My husband is trans and mm-hmm. transitioned after we got married. So, we've been married 15 years now.
Okay. Yeah. Congrats.
And they just started exploring like gender identity a couple of years ago. You know, I did a lot of like researching people whose spouses are transitioning, you know, and all of the books about that, like, and a lot of the information you see about that is written by women whose wives are trans, who married a guy and then who then later transitioned, and that's the story. And you don't get a lot of stories of cis guys whose trans husbands transitioned after they got married.
Right, who stayed with their partners.
I think most of the people who are more likely to be trans men, you know, later in life are not the people who are married to cis guys. Uh-huh. You know, I think they're married to women to begin with.
Uh-huh.
In that regard, I feel like I'm in a pretty unique situation. I know, yeah. You know, there's like a few others of us out there, but
I mean, we run the rainbow, right? Like mm-hmm. we come in all kinds of different ways, and that's the beauty of us in different identities. But I am fascinated too. And like, I want to know, did you consider yourself a member of the LGBTQIA community before this?
I like the word queer. I've always gone with queer.
Yeah. Me too. It's in that acronym.
Yeah. Even before we started talking about transitioning, I identified as a queer person. Mm-hmm. So that's the thing is I think for me, it wasn't as terribly jarring, right? The idea of now I have a husband, right? It's just like, I'm just in love with them. And I'm very specifically not saying their name because we're talking about changing it. So by the time this airs, or, you know, by the time somebody else is listening to it 6 months right. or a year from now, they might have a different name. So
yeah, we don't need to do any dead naming here. Yeah. And it also doesn't matter. Right. This is the person you love. And I'm really like, so you have got me riveted here because you are actually, I think, the first cis man I think I have interviewed in like 300 interviews that has a situation like this. So this is, I love this. Yay. It's amazing. God, I have so many questions and I'm not sure where to start. Even though you identified as queer, and I'm assuming your partner identified as queer as well, and you probably lived a very like queer lifestyle, even though you were, for all intents and purposes, a man and a woman married, or at least we thought. So when you first got together, you, according to the rest of society, were living a heteronormative life there. You were seen in the world as a straight couple. Am I correct in saying
that? Yeah, no, that's probably a pretty fair assessment about how the rest of the world was, you know, viewing us walking down the street.
Right. And now I'm imagining the rest of the world is viewing you slightly different and you might be considered more of a queer couple.
Yeah, no, we definitely, when we walk down the street, we definitely look like two middle-aged gay guys.
Atta boys. And what has that been like? So that's a transition for you. I mean, it's a transition for both of you, of course, but your husband is the one who's going through the personal transition. Mm-hmm. But your transition is also pretty immense as well. Always is. But, you know, the way you're being seen in society is really changing. And what's that like?
It's interesting because I feel like it would be pretty fair to say that, like, even before, you know, I would be seen walking down the street with my husband, I still, like, I feel like I come off as gay, right? Like, I generally paint my nails. Like, I'm that kind of guy.
I love that.
So it's not a huge difference in, like, my day-to-day life. And because we live in Atlanta, Georgia, it's not like anybody has ever, like, shouted at us as we're walking down the street holding hands. I imagine that we're probably garnering a little bit more attention from certain crowds than we had in the past.
I mean, like, for instance, when I first came out as a lesbian in my 20s, and I still experience this, I was super nervous to, like, hold a girl's hand in public or kiss a girl in public. Not because anybody ever said anything to me, but just because of the perceptions of that. And also, of course, my own internalized homophobia, which runs deep, as we all know. And I still have inklings of that, too. Like, if we're at a school event and my wife and I kiss goodbye, in my head, I'm like, oh, my God, everybody's staring at us now. Everybody's thinking things, you know? Mm. So I just was curious to hear, like, what your experience of that changes being it. Your change happened in a different way than mine did and many of us who come out did.
I think because we really just, like, pretty much keep to, you know, like, gay country. We kind of keep ourselves a little bit isolated. So, well, and, you know, some of that is intentional because we know that, you know, you get an hour outside of Atlanta and it's not going to be as safe or as cool.
Right.
So we just don't go there.
Yeah.
And I mean, really, what's there anyway?
Yeah, and the places we can go are actually getting farther and fewer in between right now, which is a sad truth for us lately, especially, you know, many of us in this community more so. I'm so curious to hear your whole experience. And I know you can't speak for your husband's experience, so I'm asking you your experience. But if you want to speak a little bit about what the transition was like between the two of you and how it came about and what your thoughts were when it first, I don't know if you had an inkling of an idea or if it was a shock to you. I'm curious to hear everything.
Well, it's definitely the kind of thing where it's like, in retrospect, it's like, oh yeah, when we first started dating, we were in our early 20s and they were a barista at a coffee shop. And they would wear like this extremely like fake looking mustache on Thursdays. It was Mustache Thursday.
So why not?
Right. Which doesn't, you know, like, okay, that doesn't necessarily make somebody trans, but you know, 20 years later, you're like, oh yeah, Mustache Thursday makes a lot more sense now.
Maybe they'll grow a mustache now.
Right. Although they have a few brothers, so like we have an idea of, you know, like if they're gonna become a super hairy guy or not. And it's not looking like it.
No. mustache isn't in the cards. I tell you what, a mustache would be in my cards if I ever went that route. And I don't want that. Based on the men in my family. So hindsight, yeah. And that makes perfect sense. And what has you brought up your family? So what has your family's experiences of this been, or your experience of your family's, and how's that gone down?
Nobody in the family lives like super local, right? It's the kind of thing where we, especially on their side of the family, like we see each other at like Christmas, maybe like one other time during the year. So there's not been a lot of, you know, like one-on-one conversations about it, but everybody has been like supportive in, but like in kind of, you know, an aloof way. Like they don't necessarily know what to say. So that it's just like thumbs up.
Kind of love the thumbs up.
Right. When he got top surgery a couple of months ago, like he specifically sent an email like to everybody in the family, group email, and said like, I am very excited about this. This is what I want to be doing. And almost kind of like, and this is the appropriate reaction for you to express.
Like low-key feeding them their responses.
Yes. Yeah.
This isn't what I want you to say, but I wouldn't mind.
Yeah. But it's definitely like, I think they're all supportive. They just don't know how to react.
Right, right.
And yeah, and you know, like thumbs up is better than not a thumbs up. So.
Very true. And it could be, you know, way worse. At least there's like low-key support. I'll use that word again. We're low-key supportive, which is better than the opposite. So, hey, take right. any love we can get. Let's be real.
Some of the siblings are coming over in a couple of weeks. So, well, I think we'll see how that conversation goes.
Yeah, you'll get a better grasp. But it's new. It seems like it's relatively new. This happened in the last few years, you said?
Yeah, yeah. Just had top surgery a couple of months ago. Has been on testosterone for like a year and a half now.
Okay, congrats. Congrats to your husband and to you for finding their true authentic self together. I love that. And so do you have children?
No. And it occurred to me while I was listening to some of your podcast, am I the first person on your show to not actually be a parent?
No, not at all. Okay. Not at all. You work with children, so it's adjacent. And also just, it's not a prerequisite to be a parent on this show. We're all chosen family here. So that's how we go. But do you have talks of wanting to become parents?
We are committed uncles.
Uh-huh. I love that for you.
Yeah.
I love that.
We've got the eight nieces and nephews. Yeah. We're the gunkles.
Love that for you. And you're going to help to teach your nieces and nephews what true allyship looks like.
Yeah.
And get rid of that monster they're trying to spin about trans folks.
Right. Right. Well, and especially because we just all live scattered throughout the South. So it's like we've got people in Alabama, Tennessee, Kentucky, ooh, North Carolina. So
you're helping, you're working to change at least the minds of those young kids, right?
Right.
Which is amazing because you never know what rhetoric is being spewed in their communities, which is just crazy. We'll be right back.
Queer Family Podcast, love is love.
Hey, queer fam. I just have to take a quick break from a chat with Jacob, the lactation wizard, who's here to prove that your chest can, in fact, clock in for feeding duty, which is amazing. If you are ready to grow that family you've been dreaming about, you're gonna most likely, if you're in this community, need a little bit of help. And California Cryobank is the OG of queer-friendly baby making. They have been helping us make our families, our beautiful families, for nearly 5 decades. And there are many reasons why I swear by them. They have a very diverse donor pool. They have deep dive profiles, which include adult photos, audio interviews, medical history, and also my personal favorite, childhood essays. So good. And they offer really great support. They have counselors who actually understand our routes to parenthood, be they IUI, IVF, ICI, donor siblings, all the things that go with us, the whole rainbow. And because they love this show so much, they're handing out a free level 2 subscription to their donor catalog. All you have to do is go to cryobank.com, enter code QueerFam25, and you're going to get that free level 2 subscription. This code can also be used towards a level 3 subscription to their donor catalog, which gives you even more info. So go ahead, guys. Go check it out. Go make those babies and then come tell me about them. Because you know I love that. All right, let's get back to the ep.
Love is love.
Let's talk about induced lactation and all the ins and outs of all the things you mentioned in the beginning, because I think you said, did you say trans men could still induce lactation?
So trans guys could induce lactation. There's not really a lot of overlap between trans guys and people who want to induce lactation. But one thing, another thing that I write about in the book is like trans guys who give birth.
Uh-huh.
And the like specific lactation questions, lactation support that community needs.
Yeah. Can we go into that a little bit? And then also, you know, like your partner having had the surgery, would that be a possibility still? Because I was under the impression, and I've spoken to many people, and this is just might be my ignorance, that if that's not there anymore, you can't do it. But I could be wrong.
So if you have had top surgery and you get pregnant and give birth, you're still going to make milk, right? The parts of the brain responsible for lactation don't know that you've had top surgery.
So the hormones still.
Yeah.
Like, oh.
So that process is still happening. You're still going to make milk. And a lot of people will take this into consideration when they're planning top surgery.
Right.
Because you can have surgery without having your nipples removed and regrafted. Even if you do have top surgery and have your nipples regrafted, repositioned, have the size changed, depending on how long it's been, like a lot of those ducts and glands will heal and you can still express milk.
Mm-hmm.
Because you've had so much tissue removed, you're probably not going to make a full supply of milk.
Right.
And how you feel about making milk is definitely like an extremely personal thing that
yes.
could go either way. I've known people who like it makes them feel very like powerful. Like I'm the, you know, providing for my young. One of the people that I talked to for my book talked about it in just in terms of like this like animalistic mammalian thing, right? Like this is what we do. We provide milk for our young. And that made them feel very good.
Yes, I talked to a guest, Jacob was his name, who said something very similar. He gave birth and breastfed. And actually, his spouse said, I thought that was the most masculine thing he could have done.
Yeah.
Because he was like, he was taking care of us.
Yeah.
And not just, you know, I love that. I love that.
But then on the other side of the spectrum, you have people who, you know, have found the whole process extremely dysphoric and need to, and just for their mental health, they need to not do that. And they, yes, 100%. And which is also 100% fine, right? Your mental yes. health is way more important, A, to you, but also to the like future well-being of your child.
100%. Yes.
So that's definitely a conversation that, you know, I have with a lot of parents. However, if somebody has had top surgery and has had their nipples removed completely and not regrafted, which I've come to realize a lot of people who are not in the queer and trans communities don't realize that that's an option, that that's something that happens.
You know, what's interesting, we were just in an interview, in an appointment with the breast surgeon. This is a whole different reason for being at a breast surgeon, but we still have to do some surgery. And I asked the question, I said, is it possible to preserve her nipple? And I feel like the doctor was even like, oh, interesting. I don't get asked that often. Yes, some people do, blah, blah, blah. And she said something about how it even doesn't always work and that skin might die anyway. And there's so many things to take into account when it comes to this. But to your point, I did find it kind of interesting the way she kind of was like, oh, okay, we can talk about that.
Yeah.
Like, why isn't that just a part of the conversation?
I asked a consultant, a friend of mine, who's been a lactation consultant for much longer than I have. I was like, what do you do if somebody gives birth and they don't have any nipples? Like while I was doing the research for the book, because I realized I knew that happened, but I didn't know the answer to that question. And it became this whole thing. She's like, why doesn't this person have nipples? And I'm like, this is a hypothetical conversation, right? Like, I'm not talking with a patient right now. I'm like, because sometimes trans guys don't have nipples. It's like, is that not a thing that everybody knows? Oh.
to your point in the beginning, what you don't know, you don't know.
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
Exactly. And that's why these conversations need to happen. And that's why a book like yours needs to be out there, because this is there are people out in the world with these experiences and there are no resources.
Yeah. And so to answer that, if somebody gives birth and they don't have any nipples, right, again, their body's still going to make milk. So then it becomes like a serious question. Like, what do we
do? Where does it go?
There is a medication called, a medicine called cabergoline, which is, I think it's only available from prescription, but it is something that you can get at the hospital if you just, like, for some reason can't be making milk, like you don't have nipples, or you just really, like, it doesn't feel right for you. It's really just like you get a shot in the arm and your body stops making milk.
Oh, good to know. I've never heard of that.
Yeah.
Didn't know. And that should be something that not just queer folks know, not just trans, that should be something that everyone knows.
Oh, who right.
is getting a baby. Like, yeah. Like, we should know this. Even cisgendered women who are straight, who are giving birth and who really don't want to breastfeed and who have to go through the pain of like letting that milk like simmer and die in their boobs. Like, that is totally not the technical way to say that, but I know it's painful because when I stopped breastfeeding, that was very painful. That should be information for everyone.
Yeah.
Everyone.
Yeah. And I don't know how. Because I've only ever attended one birth. I don't know how readily available that information is made. But it seems like it's not something that everybody just gets asked when they give birth.
When I gave birth, they did ask, are you planning on breastfeeding? And my answer was yes. So I don't know what the next thing would have been.
Oh, if you said no, would they have?
Right. I have never heard anybody getting something that magically stops their milk production.
Yeah, and I might be incorrect, but I think it really is just like a single dose.
Wow, that could stop a lot of dysphoria in many bodies. Basically, it seems like almost everybody can induce lactation.
Yeah, as long as you have nipples and the hormones responsible for lactation are made or regulated by the pituitary gland. And if there's something wrong with your pituitary gland, that's not like subtle. Right. Like if there's something wrong with your pituitary gland, you know that.
Yeah.
So aside from those like very specific deal breakers, then, yeah, like in theory, any adult could. There's definitely questions of like how long it would take, how much milk you could make, what prep would need to occur. So like, for example, if I wanted to, I would definitely need to go on estrogen and progesterone for a little while just to build up the tissue and get that cell growth going. But most people who like really want to and are really committed to it, can produce some amount of milk. It's one of those things where we can't really, like, there's no way of knowing ahead of time how effective it's going to be. So, a lot of times you get parents who have every reason to believe they'll, produce a lot of milk easily. And then, they don't. And for no verifiable reason, it's not like they were skimping out on any of the steps. It's just every body is different.
I mean, that can be said for anyone who tries to breastfeed, myself included. Exactly. I didn't have a good go of it. It didn't work out for me at all. I tried, but it didn't work out. And yeah, I'm a cisgendered woman. So for all intents and purposes, it should have been fine. But so my point is that's across the board anyway, So if it's something that you really think you would want to do, it's worth giving it a go, I feel like.
Yeah, absolutely. It's really just a lot of the support that I provide when people are inducing lactation is like almost more like counseling, right? It's more like just talking about things, talking about goals and expectations. And because once you've got the practical steps down, right, knowing how your pump works, knowing what like herbs or medications you want to use, yeah, then it's just doing the steps over and over every day.
Right. It's a lot of work from what I've heard from others who've done it. And it's the estrogen and the hormones and then the domperidone.
Yeah. And then a lot of people take domperidone, which here in the States is a whole thing because it is not FDA approved. So it's not readily available. But I mean, we say it's not FDA approved. That makes it sound super shady. But in many other Western countries, it is.
And totally it fine. Is
in some places available over the counter. So it's really not. It's not as shady as people, you know, some people think. However, it is getting it can be a little bit of a shady process.
Yeah, I talked to couples who like had it shipped from Canada. Mm-hmm. Like, the black market like sounds terrible. But then they were able to chest feed their babies. So
there's one company that ships it from somewhere in the Pacific. It's I don't remember the name of the country, but it's like a small island nation in the Pacific. But now, as of a couple of years ago, their website only accepts Bitcoin. And it's like, that just makes you seem even shadier.
It sure does. Sad we have to be so shady on these journeys.
Right. So, but on the other hand, if you live near, if you live in the northern United States, it's like you can just drive to Canada.
Yeah, just go get it in Canada.
And most people, when they induce lactation, they follow what is referred to as the Newman-Goldfarb protocol. They're Canadian doctors, right? The Newman-Goldfarb clinics are in Canada, right? The protocol that we're using, that most people are using, assumes you can easily get domperidone.
And if there's anything the queer community is good at, is being scrappy and figuring it out.
And then that's
we've
true
learned
too,
to be
right?
scrappy. By necessity.
Right.
It's all wonderful and it's all important information. And I can only imagine that there are so many couples out there, be they queer, cis, straight, any of them, who could really use this knowledge. So it's a good thing you have a book. What kind of stuff can folks expect in the book? Like, how did you put it all together? And how is there so much that you could put into a book? That's a thick book.
I knew that I wanted to include a lot of information and none of it is going to be relevant to everybody, right? Like many people who buy this book are going to give birth. So that whole chapter on inducing lactation, is not going to be super relevant to them. I did want to make sure that the book like ran the gamut, that it was just one book for everybody, even if not everybody needs all of the information in it. You know, when I first started like writing the book in earnest, I was at a lactation conference and I saw this person, Brynna Hayden, speaking on supporting induced lactation specifically for trans women. And this was not at a queer conference. This was a conference for lactation professionals. And I was really excited that like, all right, this community is, there's more people than just us interested in this. But when they were doing the talk, I was like, okay, I need to interview this person for my book. Like, they know way more about this than I do. Right. So that kind of started me off on, like, reaching out to the community, interviewing other people. So I interviewed a few other lactation professionals who had specialties kind of adjacent to mine. My book has a lot of block quotes in it, right? I do a lot of, like, pulling from these interviews just because... when I recognize that somebody is more qualified to speak on this than I am, I'm not going to try to paraphrase them, So I spoke with Brynna about inducing lactation for trans women. I spoke to a few other professionals about their experiences. I spoke with several parents who had induced lactation. And those I present in the book as case studies where I really do just like... It's just the transcript of what they said. But it's interesting because I didn't realize it going in. But after I had done my first interview, I was like, oh, every lactation professional I'm going to talk to for this book has their own lactation story, right? They all have kids. They all have their own lactation story. So then they also, those stories also became parts of the book because, because a lot of people, their lactation experience is why they became a lactation consultant. So one of the people that I talk to, Kristen Cavuto, talks a lot about supporting people with, it's a specific condition. It's called IGT, which is insufficient glandular tissue, which is exactly what it sounds like. But there was a lot of talk about, you know, supporting people who have had reduction surgeries, whether they're trans guys who have had top surgery or women who have had a reduction, just, you know, regardless of gender presentation, they just, you know, had back pain or whatever. Like there's a lot of overlap in how you support those people, how you treat those people. Well, and actually, so I just want to clarify, when I say insufficient glandular tissue is exactly what it sounds like, that's a misnomer, because what it might sound like is you have small breasts, and that's not what it is. It's more in how the glandular tissue is like distributed on your chest that can make lactation difficult. Huh. Yeah, the size, especially for like cis women, the size of your breasts has no indication of how much milk you'll be able to produce. So need to make sure that's like perfectly clear to anybody who's thinking about, you know, giving birth or whatever. Even if you have small breasts, you'll still very likely be able to make a full supply of milk for your child if that's what you want.
Yeah, it's all really important info. And I'm so glad you've written this book and that it's out there now. And if anybody is interested in learning more, they should find your book. So where can folks find you and your book?
My book was released by Jessica Kingsley, which is an imprint of Hachette, which is like a large publishing company. So it's readily available. I've not like gone into a Barnes & Noble and seen if it's there, but I have every reason to believe it would be. You can also order it from the website. I always direct people to bookshop.org to order books. As well, if you have any people who have questions about the book or want to speak to me, you can reach out to me through Instagram or through my website. My Instagram is at JacobIBCLC. My website is JacobEngelsmanIBCLC.com. I am extremely Googleable, like intentionally.
Yep. Look Jacob up.
Yeah. Thank you. And I do, I always like to make really clear that if people have questions about lactation support, like especially other lactation professionals who want to learn how to better support members of queer and trans communities, feel free to send me, DM me or reach out through my website. Ask me any question at all you want. I maintain a very strict policy of assuming that all questions are being asked in good faith, even if you don't feel like you know the right words of like how to ask a question. I don't want people to feel like they can't talk to me because they're afraid of offending me. I maintain a very strict policy. I assume you're coming from a genuine space when you ask me questions.
Good for you. Good for you. Awesome.
We'll see how long that keeps up for, but so far
well,
so
I
good.
I hope you don't get some awful trolls because they're ruthless. Can be ruthless, at least the ones that went after me, go after me. But all of this will be in the show notes, so all you can find all the links and stuff. And this has been really a fantastic chat. And thank you so much for coming on and sharing your knowledge and expertise and your book with us.
Thank you so much for having me. This has been great.
Queer Family Podcast.
Before we say goodbye, I just want to say one last thank you to our sponsor, California Cryobank. What you're going to want to do is use code QueerFam25 to get you a free level 2 subscription to their donor catalog. Let's go. Let's go. Thank you, California Cryobank.
Love is love.
Whew. Well, folks, I hope you enjoyed that episode as much as I enjoyed it. And if you did enjoy it, feel free to listen to another or watch another. I have so many episodes for your listening or viewing pleasure. Just go pick one and enjoy. There's a lot. There really is. And also, if you really do like this show, please, I know I say it all the time, but please do consider supporting the show on Patreon. You're just going to go to patreon.com/thequeerfamilypodcast. You're going to pick a tier, you're going to join, and you're going to get that bonus content. And you're also going to get my love and adoration for the rest of my life. I love you all. Thanks for tuning in. Keep on tuning in, and I'll see you next time. Mwah. Hey, queer fam, an announcement here. If you're in NYC or anywhere close by, mark your calendars. On Friday, June 28th at 12 p.m., that's 2025, that's this year, the Queer Family Podcast is teaming up with Sugar Mouse NYC and our friends over at Gays with Kids and GWK Academy to throw our very first Pride Family Meetup. And y'all are all invited. Let's go. This is a family-friendly Pride party made just for us. There's a full bar for the grown-ups. There are arcade games and activities for the kiddos. And wait for it, a drag story hour with the fabulous Ms. Jade. It's all going down at Sugar Mouse on the Lower East Side. You can RSVP using the link in the show notes. And of course, the link is all over my socials too. So come connect, celebrate, and let's build our queer parenting village and celebrate this super resilient and fabulous community. I will see you there. Let's go. Let's party. It's time.